There are times when only meeting twice a month can really grate. This is one of those times. The truth of it is that there are three messages I'd like to share with you today. Not that I will, but that I'd like to. One concerns Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., whose birthday and life we celebrated last Monday. We've remembered and celebrated Dr. King thus far every year. This year we've sung in his memory one of the great anthems of the civil rights movement, "O Freedom." And we'll have to leave it there. On the plus side, you are spared a rant from me about the Martin Luther King Day sales, particularly at places where Dr. King, were he alive today, might well be picketing. The second message was the one that was actually scheduled for today. I wanted to embrace the Chinese New Year and recognize just how diverse our New Years are. The Jewish New Year, the Muslim New Year, the Baha'i New Year, to name just a few. One of the key points to ponder is just how important it is to celebrate the new year. Every year we get to push, if you will, a reset button. Okay, last year is over. Let's start again. How important it is for each of us to be able to start again. We humans, we screw up. And more often than we would like. Like it or not, it's a part of being human. It's important, I think, to have a ritual moment to say, okay, that's over. Reset. And sometimes it's not that we've screwed up. It's that life has let us down. Parents die. Friends die. Friendships die. It is good, so very good and healthy, to be able to say, okay, I will remember, but it's over. New year. But I've scrapped that one too. As I look around, as I listen to the world racing around me, I am increasingly convinced that one of life's most important questions is being misplaced, if you will. Or to be a bit more dramatic about it, lost. It is that question that I'd like us to look at today. There is a poignant passage in the musical Man of La Mancha, where Cervantes speaks of holding a fallen comrade in his arms. Cervantes describes this comrade and others in this way. Their eyes filled with confusion, whimpering the question, why? Cervantes continues, I do not think they were asking why they were dying, but why they had lived. Most of us, perhaps, probably, all of us have at one time or another gotten so involved in some project, a book, a puzzle, that we lose all sense of time. Suddenly we look up and ask, ah, where's the time gone? If we're not intentional about it, this can happen to our lives as well. So much to do. So much information to grasp. So many balls in the air that suddenly we look up and ask, where has our life gone? And then the question, why have we lived? So today, I beg your indulgence as we enter into the realm of the existential and ask the question, why? More specifically, why are we here? Is there, can there be, should there be any meaning to the who we are? there is perhaps no more important question for us to answer than, what gives my life meaning? Our answer or non-answer to that question will govern how we live, how we treat others, how we treat ourselves. And I must share with you that I think that for so many of us, there is an unrecognized disconnect, if you will, between what we think we should believe and will happily espouse to anyone who asks, and what in fact we do believe. In our heart of hearts, with the lights out, and we're alone. I can share with you what I believe, not from on high, not from Mount Sinai, but just from behind this pulpit. I believe that the noise, the constant noise, is wrong. Possessions, power, honors, titles, glitz, these are all distractions. If we see them as goals, we lose our way. In the end, who we are, is all we ever truly have. So if we are to search for the meaning of our lives, the answer to why am I here, it can come from one place and one place only: who we are. Life is frequently described as a race. We all want to know who will come in first. That's what's important. That's what gives our life meaning. Who hasn't heard, winning isn't everything, it's the only thing. I recall from my youth and my not so youth, hearing the complaint that sportsmanship meant creating sissies. We need to create winners. I wonder. If winning is who we are, does that give our lives meaning? By itself, I would say no. I believe the value of our lives lies not so much in a race, but in the opportunity that comes with being alive. It is what we do with that opportunity that will give our lives meaning, or strip all meaning from us. Do we use our life opportunity to acquire or to serve? Do we use our hands to grasp, or do we extend them to help? Particularly in the United States, but I think it's worldwide, we mark the meaning of our lives by how successful we are. And let's be honest, success feels good. It does. Success is fun. But I would submit that in terms of meaning, it is not what we succeed at, but what we strive for that counts. Or if you will, some will tell us that success is setting out to accomplish something and then accomplishing it. I would suggest that success is setting out to do something positive for our human family and the planet we dwell on, and no matter what, never letting go. I would suggest, just as example, that a person at the most menial of jobs who still gathers up what little he or she may have and shares it with a neighbor who has even less is a huge success and causes the angels to sing with joy. I would also suggest that the tycoon who amasses billions off the overburdened backs of the people who work for him is an abject failure. I'm not saying anything new. This is thousands of years old. It is fundamental to Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, Judaism, and every other spiritual path. From Muhammad's statement that the best Islam is to feed the hungry and spread peace among those one knows and those not yet met, to Jesus' story of the Good Samaritan, where men of power and wealth just pass by, and the outsider acts with justice. These are our teachings, but we get distracted. Glitz and glamour are distracting. One of my favorite poems is a simple one by Emily Dickinson. If I can stop one heart from breaking, I shall not live in vain. If I can ease one life the aching, or cool one pain, or help one fainting robin unto his nest again, I shall not live in vain. For me, what is so moving and important in the poem is the embrace of two very important qualities of meaning. The first is the most obvious. Yes, Emily is trying to help others. She seeks to keep a heart from breaking and to ease the ache of another's life, and also realizes that it's not just humanity to whom we should reach out, but even the fallen robin. Yet for me, what stands out and seems so very important is that she realizes achievements don't have to be huge. If I can stop one heart from breaking, I shall not live in vain. It is what we set out to do, and not how grandly we do it, that is so very important. That, for me, in such a positive way, answers the question, why? Why have I lived? Before we set out to do something, we are trained by our culture to ask. Indeed, we have it pounded into our heads to ask, how successful will I be? I would submit that if we seek meaning in our lives, how successful will I be is the wrong question to ask. Yet listen to our kids, and older folk as well. For so many, the goal in life is to be famous, not to mention having a big house and a car that screams, I've made it. That goal comes from a culture that lifts up and lauds the famous and the wealthy. Our spiritual paths, however, teach us that the goal in life is to be of help. Now, I know, certainly for the overwhelming majority and perhaps everyone seated here, I'm preaching to the choir. I know that. So why bother? One reason is that the call to glitz and glamour is so constant and can be so corrosive. And it is worth it to be reminded from time to time that there is another way. Another reason is a difficult conversation I had with someone just a few weeks ago who pondered a failed life. His words: he felt it a failed life, even though he had always been giving and supportive, both of friends and people he had never met, simply because they needed help. But a failed life, again, his words, because there was still so much war, so much hate, so much hurt. We had a long talk, and I think and pray that I helped him to understand just how wonderfully successful and, more to the point, meaningful his life had been. I'm not fond of the word sin. But if there is such a thing, The sin lies not in trying and failing to be the best possible human being. The sin is in not trying. Much of life is luck. We all know that. Some of us are born with great genes. Some of us aren't. Some of us are born into loving families. Some of us aren't. Some of us are born into countries that allow, even encourage us to grow and to flourish. Some of us aren't. Some of us seem to lead charmed lives. And some of us seem to face far more tragedy and hard circumstances than any human being should ever have to endure. And there was a time when meaning was placed on all of this. Good luck was considered a sign of God's love. Bad luck? And clearly, you've done something wrong. I would urge us to put our attention elsewhere. Much of life is indeed luck. Just luck. There is no meaning to luck. There may be some joy when we have it, or agony when we do not. But there is no meaning. If we want to be able to answer in a positive way why we have lived, if we seek lives of meaning, I believe we would do well to remember that it is the quality of what we do, not the quantity. There's that old bromide. It's not whether you win or lose, it's how you play the game. I would rephrase that. I agree, it's not whether we win or lose. But I think it is less how we play the game that counts than it is what game we are playing. Are we playing the game of me? Or are we playing the game of us? The game of us is a rejection of the zero-sum world we spoke of just a month ago. The game of us says, I can't succeed unless you do. I can't be whole unless you are. Brothers and sisters of the human family, we are in this together. We shall sink or swim together. Personally, I prefer swimming. Amen.